This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Welcome to Area News. Important stories that impact your life do not always happen in the metro area. Keep up with the news happening all around you and in your neighborhood, no matter where you live. For the next 60 minutes, it's Area News, right here on your audio reading service.
Welcome. This is Area News, and I'm your reader, Jennifer, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I'll be reading from the Herald Republican, the Star, the New Sun, and other local news sources from kpcnews.com, copyright November 22, 2025. We will begin with the following story. Church-State Debate. Father Advocates for Religion-Free Public Education by Cheryl Prentice of KPC Media, Dateline, Kendallville. A community conversation November 5th about off-site religious education during public school hours drew advocates for and against LifeWise Academy's expanding reach into local public school districts. The Resistance Coalition of Noble County invited secular education advocate Zachary Parrish to speak for a program entitled Separation of Church and State, a community discussion with Zachary Parrish at the Kendallville Public Library. Parrish gave a 90-minute program about his experiences with Ohio-based LifeWise Academy, a release-time religious education program during school hours that's aimed at unchurched students in public schools. LifeWise Academy was founded in 2019 by Joel Penton in Van Wert, Ohio, to provide Bible education during school hours. Penton skirted legal rulings about religion in school, instead using a little-known Supreme Court ruling that said release-time religious education must meet three requirements. Classes must be off school grounds, privately funded by donors, not government money, and parents must give explicit consent for their child to attend. LifeWise has rapidly expanded with its plug-and-play business model, using 10 steps for building support and raising funds to launch the program. In the four-county region, these school districts are participating at various levels in LifeWise Academy. DeKalb Eastern Community Schools, DeKalb Central United School District, East Noble School Corporation, Lakeland Community Schools, Central Noble Community School Corporation, Garrett Kaiser Butler Community Schools, Fremont Community Schools, Hamilton Community Schools, and MSD, Steuben County. Parrish is the single dad of a daughter and a former member of the Mormon faith. He lived in Defiance, Ohio before moving to Fort Wayne. Parrish is a co-founder of the Secular Education Association, an organization of parents, concerned clergy, and other community members who respect the separation of church and state. Members respect each other's different religions, family values, and parental rights, and want children to learn without religious pressure or coercion. Parrish said changes in state law in several states, including in Indiana, say that the public schools shall cooperate instead of may cooperate with release-time religious education. That means public school districts don't have a choice to allow release-time religious education in their schools. They must. Parrish has focused on raising awareness about LifeWise since 2021, when the organization came to his then second-grade daughter's Ohio school. He said a majority of students in her class enrolled in LifeWise, but his daughter and a few other students remained at school. He said the school didn't plan instructional time at all for those students who chose not to attend LifeWise. The school created a study hall and gave them iPads to read by themselves, Parrish said. As a parent, Parrish wanted to see the entire LifeWise curriculum, but was denied access to it. He discovered that LifeWise only made certain curriculum lessons available for parents to see. Parrish signed up as a parent volunteer and received the curriculum during training, which he then read, posted online, and shared with other parents. He never intended to serve as a LifeWise volunteer. LifeWise sued Parrish in mid-July 2023 in an Indiana federal court for infringing on their copyright for the curriculum. The lawsuit was settled in December 2024, with Parrish agreeing to take down his posts of the curriculum and not distribute any more copies. LifeWise must share an up-to-date curriculum with anyone who asks for it on its website. LifeWise has posted a request form for access to the curriculum, but has limited access, if granted, to 48 hours. No copies of the curriculum can be printed or saved as a PDF file. Parrish said LifeWise isn't truthful about many aspects of the academy. He said LifeWise claims the curriculum is non-denominational, but the materials are licensed from the Gospel Project through LifeWay Christian Resources, affiliated with the Southern Baptist Convention. Parrish said Penton is a marketer, not a pastor or theologian. Penton has successfully created religious education as a franchise, complete with merchandise. Penton has said that we have to McDonald's this, Parrish said, noting that LifeWise's color scheme of red and yellow are the same as McDonald's. Parrish said the estimated budget is $125,000 for launching a LifeWise program. Not all of the funds raised in the 10-step launch model stays with the local program. LifeWise corporate gets the larger share, and local programs get a card with a spendable amount to use for supplies, he said. LifeWise has also been criticized for its division of students, lack of tolerance for others' beliefs, and recruiting methods by offering students treats if they bring others to the program, Parrish said. The question and answer period had no moderator, so audience members talked over each other with their questions and comments. Sometimes it was combative. No speakers gave their names. Greg Rice, an East Noble critic who attends the monthly school board meeting, said he appreciated Parrish's willingness to come to Kendallville and then evangelize the audience with his own religious views. LifeWise is not the monster here, said Rice. You have to respect the space of others' beliefs, Parrish replied. A man said his issue with LifeWise is that the program varies between school districts and has no oversight. Another person said LifeWise should have to have the same level of background checks that schools and other youth organizations, such as the Scouts, have. A man criticized Parrish for using a lie to obtain the LifeWise curriculum by purposely gaming the system. Parrish answered that it's ironic that he had to use a lie to raise awareness about the curriculum that still wouldn't be available to read without his action and the subsequent lawsuit. Lisa Daniel of Resistance Coalition said she had used the online form and looked at the LifeWise curriculum. She described it as a, quote, fundamentalist learning program, end quote. That may promote Christian nationalism. She said parents should talk to their pastors or ministers about how the LifeWise curriculum may or may not fit with their own faith doctrine. A contingent of LifeWise advocates in the program's signature red T-shirts attempted to shout down anyone who asked questions of Parrish. East Noble School Board member Joel Lash, sitting with LifeWise supporters in their red T-shirts, told the audience he was the subject of an effort to keep him off of the 2024 election ballot because he was a Christian. According to a September 4, 2024 New Sun story, the candidacies of Lash and John Clayson for the at-large seat on the board were challenged because of omissions on their filing paperwork, specifically the lack of notarized signatures and the lack of information on how they wanted their names to appear on the ballot. Both items are required, but the election board voted 2-1 to overlook the filing errors and allow both men to be on the ballot. Lash won his seat, but Clayson lost to his opponent, Aaron A.J. Byerly. A man and woman identified themselves as leaders in the Central Noble LifeWise program. They gave a fervent defense of LifeWise and said the curriculum only teaches core truths of the Bible. They said the program gives hope to kids. A man wearing a LifeWise shirt said, "Since I came out for LifeWise, witchcraft has put curses on me." A woman pointed out that since LifeWise is allowed to have release time religious education, other faiths may also demand the same privilege. She also said LifeWise coerces kids to adopt its interpretation of Scripture. A granddaughter was told that her grandmother would burn in hell, she said. A woman who said she worked in a school system took issue with LifeWise removing students from art, music, gym class, lunch, or recess. The program may not remove students from core classes such as reading, math, science, or social studies. There is no time in the school day that isn't important, she said. Why don't you engage churches for after-school programs, or better yet, take your kids to church on Sunday? The audience applauded. Hunters Feed the Hungry. Groups Take Donations of Deer Meat by Lisa Esquivel-Long of FortWayneBusiness.com, Dateline Fort Wayne. With utility costs rising during the cold weather, Hunters Donations of Deer is a much-needed protein for many struggling Hoosiers. Hunt for Hunger allows hunters who may love to hunt but don't want the meat or whose freezers are full to donate field-dressed deer to one of 49 food processors in the program. The program runs from archery to firearm seasons. With bow hunting having started in October and gun season opening last weekend, County Line Church of God's Food Pantry has already received donations through Hunt for Hunger. Our neighbors, one of their greatest needs is protein, said Wendy, a co-coordinator of County Line's food pantry, who asked that just her first name be used. She noted the prices of eggs this year have resulted in the food pantry being unable to give that protein source to food pantry users in the last few months. The price of eggs in Indiana started falling in the spring after months of rising costs. The Hunt for Hunger and donations from area farmers have been a blessing, she said. We want to give food pantry users quality, not just some of them can afford hot dogs, but they need something better. They need some good quality meat, she said. Elderly recipients who used to hunt or grew up with families that hunted are excited to have the venison. That is a treat for them, Wendy said. It brings back childhood memories. The food pantry is an emergency site that gives out food the third Friday of the month. People who are on a budget or on food stamps, SNAP programs, if they've had unexpected expenses, the money runs thin that last week, and our goal is to fill that last week. Some recipients just come in during the winter when the holidays and utility bills take up a chunk of their money, Wendy said. Captain Jet Quillen of the Indiana DNR Law Enforcement Division said his division's Hunt for Hunger is a program with its goal to get food and ground venison to Hoosiers that need it. The program pays for the food processing fee and gets the venison in 1- and 2-pound packages to places such as food banks. About a quarter pound of meat is one serving, and while deer have different weights, a rule of thumb is that one deer can provide around 200 meals, Quillen said. It's a growing program, Quillen said. Last year, hunters donated over 1,000 deer to Hunt for Hunger, with over 48,000 pounds of ground venison distributed, Quillen said. Susie Jordan, executive director of Hoosiers Feeding the Hungry in Garrett, a partner with DNR for the Hunt for Hunger, said her agency coordinates with deer processors who have registered through the DNR. We all know meat prices have gone through the roof, and this is a great way for food pantries to get something that people may love to hunt, but they don't choose to have the meat. This is a way they can give back, Jordan said. Last year, Hoosiers Feeding the Hungry coordinated the distribution of over 840 deer processed into over 38,380 pounds of venison for the Hunt for Hunger program. Last year, her agency provided meat to over 70 agencies in 40 counties. The agency also runs the Meat for Forks, a livestock program. Despite callers seeking to buy some of the deer meat, it cannot be sold in Indiana. Sheriffs and police departments can put callers' names on a list so that when a deer is struck, those on the list can find out where to get the meat, Quillen said. Hunters who wish to donate through the Hunt for Hunger program can go on in.gov/huntforhunger. Sheriff's Office investigates Friday crash. From staff reports, Dateline Angola. One person remains in critical condition after a semi-tractor-trailer rig struck a car early Friday morning on U.S. 20 near West Otter Lake in western Steuben County. Edward F. Nick, 74, of rural Angola, was driving east on U.S. 20 at 4 a.m., according to the crash report. His 2023 Kia traveled left of center and into the path of a westbound 1998 Kenworth driven by Pedro A. Garcia, 55, of East Chicago. Garcia attempted to avoid the collision by steering to the north shoulder of U.S. 20, but the two vehicles collided nearly head-on, trapping Nix inside his vehicle, the report said. Steuben County Emergency Medical Service responded with the Orland Fire Department. Nix had to be extricated from the vehicle and transported to Parkview Regional Medical Center in Fort Wayne, where he remains listed in critical condition as of late Friday morning. Garcia was not injured. Both drivers were wearing seat belts and their airbags deployed. Fog was in the area at the time of the accident, and the pavement was wet. Due to the severity of the crash and injuries, the Steuben County Fatal Alcohol Crash Team responded to assist in the investigation, though alcohol was not believed to be a factor, Chief Deputy Michael Meeks said. The Angola Police Department and Indiana State Police also assisted at the scene. Officials say taxpayers will have to pay more for fewer services. Concerns raised for halt to quality of life projects by Lisa Esquivel Long of KPC Media, Dateline Fort Wayne. Someone has to pay the piper even if property taxes go down. Mayors and local government leaders from across Northeast Indiana gathered November 14 in Fort Wayne for a meeting with Accelerate Indiana municipalities to discuss how they're reacting budget-wise to Senate-enrolled Act 1. The act, which went into effect this year, makes cuts to property taxes and alters the local income tax structure. That's good news for many property taxpayers. However, cities and towns rely on a portion of those taxes to fund their budgets for things that range from fixing sidewalks to paying police officers' salaries. The full impact of SEA 1 on property taxes won't occur until 2031, Matt Greller, CEO of AIM, said after the meeting. We want to make sure that there's a complete understanding that the people have spoken, the legislature has spoken. Everybody wanted some modifications to the property tax system. It'll be tough, but we can manage our way through that. The important piece is the legislature has told us they want to see us use the income tax to fund local government services. So we want to make sure that that is at a place that will work into the future. Mayor David Martin of Angola said his community can handle the loss of revenue from the property tax reduction piece of SEA 1 through careful management and make it invisible to our constituents. Local income tax, on the other hand, not so much. He has recommended that City Council pass a tax increase on residents to a maximum rate of 1.2%, a significant number that we will be asking them to pay, and at the same time, we're going to have to tell them, by the way, we're going to have to cut services by a minimum of 10%, and that would be across the board, public safety, roads, parks, everything that city government does. Columbia City Mayor Ryan L. Daniel said after the meeting, so we have to have a hard conversation as local leaders across the state of Indiana about what it is residents really want to pay for. We can give them the world, the moon, and the stars. We have that ability by the state of Indiana, but somebody has to pay for it. As our revenues go down and their property tax rebates go up slightly, they're still going to end up paying more. At the same time, they'll be getting less in services, said Daniel, who will be the next AIM president. I think if you were to poll the vast majority of Hoosiers, they're going to tell you that's not a deal they want to sign up for. One by one, during the AIM meeting, one of several being held around the state, leaders of cities and towns discussed what they must do while guessing how much money their communities will be receiving from property taxes. For Columbia City, that includes a hiring freeze and shelving quality of life projects, according to Daniel. What we're trying to address at the city level is, how do we continue to provide the city services that people expect and want, Daniel said. 55%, roughly, of the city's property tax budget goes to public safety, police, fire, dispatch, right? That's not income tax. That's purely property taxes. Daniel said he wasn't trying to be disastrous, but it's death by a thousand paper cuts. And at the end of the day, the leaders are in their office to perform public service. For Butler, the cuts are going to affect its plans to hire more firefighters. Butler Mayor Mike Hartman said the city had a part-time volunteer fire chief over the volunteer department and had a five-year plan. In year two, two volunteer firefighter positions were made, full-time positions. In year three, this year, the part-time chief was to be made full-time. Then the third through sixth volunteer firefighters would eventually be full-time. Right now, SEA 1 is pushing back plans for making firefighters 5 and 6 full-time, he said. Dave Clark, mayor of Auburn, has implemented a hiring freeze in some of the civil departments. The city is running at minimal staffing levels for both police and fire, he said. Richard Strick, mayor of Huntingdon, said one of the biggest impacts his community will see without changes to SEA 1 is on the schools. One of the things that people look at in choosing where to live is the quality of schools, he said. Madeline Sade Bartle, clerk treasurer of Churubusco, said, we've seen a dramatic decrease to our circuit breaker taxes, and that's going to completely eliminate whatever increase we have with our max levy, in addition to about $60,000 more. New Haven Mayor Steve McMichael said the city has been able to grow this decade, resulting in the ability to resurface 50 of the city's 80 miles of streets and increase its police force by 50%. McMichael said the city can't lose ground. Its municipal advisor has done an analysis that the city's local income tax will have a $1.5 million decrease. That's not a $1.5 million decrease that we would get. That's $1.5 million we're getting today that we won't have. The Parks Department, which isn't a government department, has a pool that runs at a deficit of $80,000 a year. If a decision has to be made, that looks like some pretty low-hanging fruit, McMichael said. Carrie Mugford, clerk treasurer of North Manchester, said the town has used local income tax to pay for fire trucks, which previously cost $465,000 and now cost over $1 million. Bonding for a truck would cost more and take away from other services. Scott Long, mayor of Wabash, said the city has hiring freezes and is looking at not replacing retirees the next 3 years. Historically, garbage pickup has been paid through property taxes, costing $652,000 a year. Dave Wood, Mishawaka mayor and AIM president, said his city is already going through its reserves and implementing a 1% local tax and will still see a $15 million shortfall by 2028 or 20% cut. 65% of our budget goes to public safety, Wood said. I could cut literally every single department entirely out of our budget, and I still would have to cut police and fire by 8.5%. Well, I can't cut every other department out of our budget. Greller, the CEO of AIM, said after the meeting that this was one of about a half dozen meetings AIM had that week and more planned the following week. I think the most concerning piece for us is that there's been almost an immediate stop on quality of life projects, the everythings that attract you, me, and others into a particular community and keep us there, Greller said. We all know today that jobs follow people, people follow the amenities and the quality of life. And that's really important for city and town leaders to make sure that those things exist in their communities. SEA 1, without changes, will make that difficult, he said. North River District Plan takes major step forward with selection of developer by Lisa Esquivel-Long of KPC Media, Dateline Fort Wayne. For Wayne Mayor Sharon Tucker, joined by representatives of Visit Fort Wayne and Turnstone, announced November 19 the selection of PB Development, the development affiliate of Price Brothers, as the master developer for the North River District. Amid a pep rally backdrop complete with cheerleaders from Bishop Lures High School, Tucker responded to those questioning the city's plan for the development at a time when the city is facing budget cuts due to SB 1, cutting property tax income. Affordable and market-rate house is needed for the city. We need more people living in the city to expand the tax basis, Tucker said. By the time costs related to the development will occur, hopefully residents will be moving into the housing portion, generating tax dollars to offset those costs, she said. Bert Lowen, Vice President of Development for Price Brothers, talked about how the youth field house would be a draw for tourism, but what tourists want in addition are places nearby to stay and to dine and visit while they're not attending their sports events. Lowen has worked in Fort Wayne before. He started his career as an architect and worked on Jefferson Point's open-air shopping center on the southwest side. Price Brothers, the largest real estate developer in Kansas City, is a full-service real estate development and construction management team with a diverse portfolio of retail, multifamily, single-family, office, industrial, and mixed-use projects. They are the developer of a variety of housing projects as well as the premier sports and entertainment complex, Blue Hawk, located in Overland Park, Kansas. Price Brothers is the right firm to bring our vision of a vibrant mixed-use district to life, Tucker said in an announcement. They have a proven track record of delivering transformational projects similar in size and scope to the North River District. This bold project is critical to continuing city and regional economic growth and momentum, and I look forward to working with Price Brothers as we move into the planning and public engagement phase. Price Brothers rose to the top from a total of 20 development teams that submitted qualifications to the city's redevelopment department. A redevelopment advisory committee made up of economic development and community leaders reviewed all proposals, conducted interviews, and unanimously agreed that Price Brothers was uniquely qualified to lead the project. The fact that the North River District project has generated this level of interest from multiple national and regional developers confirms that the work Fort Wayne has done in the last 20 years continues to pay off, City of Fort Wayne Redevelopment Director Alec Johnson said in the announcement. This is not the time to rest on our laurels, but to move forward with purpose to take advantage of this well-earned momentum. The 29-acre North River site is bounded by Clinton, Harrison, and 4th Streets and serves as an important gateway into downtown Fort Wayne. The site was previously used as a rail yard and scrap yard dating back to 1902. The land has not been actively used since 2006. In March, Victus Advisors in Park City, Utah, held a presentation at Grand Wayne Center on how Fort Wayne could benefit from a youth sports field house. At November 19's announcement, Jill Boggs, president and CEO of Visit Fort Wayne, talked about the growth occurring in the youth tourism industry. Youth sports events such as a taekwondo tournament require significant space, 100,000 to 150,000 square feet, Boggs said. Another, the USA Karate National Championships, would require 55,000 square feet. Each could result in around $1.5 million in tourism income for the city. Mike Mushet, Chief Executive Officer of Turnstone, one of 9 Paralympian training facilities in the country, said the field house would provide the space that Turnstone needs to bring in even more adaptive sports events. In October, Turnstone hosted the 2025 World Paravolley Sitting Volleyball World Cup that brought in 20 teams from over a dozen countries. The athletes spent 10 days in Fort Wayne, resulting in an economic impact of $1.2 million, Mushet said. In addition to the economic dollars, a youth sports field house designed for players of all abilities would also put a spotlight on Fort Wayne's efforts at adaptive buildings, the most recent one being the remodeled Arts United Center, Mushet said. With the selection of the master developer, the planning and public engagement phase for the North River District starts off. The development team will meet with local business and community leaders, elected officials, residents of Bloomingdale neighborhood, and the general public to gather input about the design and uses for the site. Housing, both affordable and market rate, will be a primary focus for the site, as will plans for the North River Field House, which will establish Fort Wayne as a key youth and adaptive sports tourism destination. Spanning 160,000 square feet, the facility is anticipated to accommodate various indoor sports and activities, including basketball, soccer, volleyball, wrestling, cheerleading, pickleball, baseball, flag football, and more. Recent feasibility studies estimate the field house will generate approximately $36 million in economic activity annually, primarily from visitors coming to Fort Wayne for tournaments. This will support nearly 900 jobs and contribute approximately $12.9 million in labor income each year. It is expected to create demand for 54,000 hotel nights annually and generate an estimated $733,000 in food and beverage and innkeeper's tax revenue annually. When not in use by outside visitors for tournaments, the field house could be used by area high schools and colleges, club sports programs, and community organizations. For more information and to stay up to date on the project, visit thenorthriverdistrict.com. Analysis: property tax changes to squeeze businesses, owners of low-value homes, by Leslie Bonilla Munoz of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. Recent changes to Indiana's property tax system will likely cut bills for most Hoosier homeowners, a new analysis has found. But owners of pricey houses are expected to get bigger breaks, while those with low-value dwellings may pay more, according to an Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute report released November 14th. Its author, Indiana tax expert Larry DeBoer, said Governor Mike Braun's hallmark tax law may squash growth in assessed value statewide through 2031 when key changes take full effect. Chief among them is the homestead standard deduction, which Senate Enrolled Act 1 phases out by 2031. The fixed deduction lops $48,000 off the taxable value of a primary residence. If you've got a $500,000 house, you got a $1 million house, $48,000 is nothing, DeBoer said. If you've got an $80,000 house, $48,000 is very significant. DeBoer, an emeritus agricultural economics professor at Purdue University, presented his results Friday at the Indiana Farm Bureau's headquarters in Indianapolis. The supplemental deduction, however, will rise from its current 37.5% to a whopping 66.7% by 2031. Because it's a percentage, homeowners will save less on cheap homes than pricey ones. The break-even point at which the two policies yield the same taxable value is a home worth $102,740 per DeBoer. He estimated the average in Indiana at $234,500. Counties with high homestead values, particularly Boone and Hamilton, will take harder hits to their tax bases, he said. If Senate Enrolled Act 1 restricts assessed value growth but levies, the total government can collect, rise, tax rates will also creep higher. DeBoer calculated that most property will hit the property tax caps at a rate of $3 per $100 in assessed value. Homestead property owners get a circuit breaker credit on the amount of property taxes over 1% of assessed value. Many primary residences will likely reach the caps by 2031, according to the analysis. Property tax bills for those houses will be higher than now, but lower than they would have been without the law. DeBoer joked that when Hoosiers complain bills went up, Local officials can reply, ah, had we not changed the policy, it would have gone up even more, and the taxpayer will be satisfied. Rueful laughter, right? DeBoer said. Under his projections, it really is a tax reduction for the average homeowner, but the average homeowner is not going to believe it. But for those not at the caps, pricey homes are expected to carry smaller increases in their bills or even slight drops. Low-value homes could see double-digit percentage hikes per the report. Also beginning in 2026, a new supplemental tax credit will apply after the caps, taking off 10% or up to $300. Property types that hit the caps at 2% of assessed value get new breaks under Senate Enrolled Act 1, the first deduction that those folks have ever really gotten, DeBoer said. Non-homestead residential, like apartment buildings or vacation houses, falls under that category. So does farmland. The new deduction phases into 33.4% by 2031. DeBoer estimated that if gross assessed value for non-homestead residential rises 5% annually through 2031, the net assessed value would fall each year over that time period. Farmland net assessed value is also projected to fall most years, and under DeBoer's assumptions, the net would be 33.4% lower in 2031 than it is in 2025. Senate Enrolled Act 1 also raised the business personal property tax exemption from $80,000 to $2 million. DeBoer said that will impact small and medium-sized firms more, since larger ones with more property will continue paying as before. Counties with a high share of business personal property will see lower losses from the exemption, like rural counties hosting large electric utility installations, according to the analysis. The law also ditches a 30% floor on those property assessments after 2025. DeBoer predicted little effect in the short term, higher assessed values in the medium term, and lower assessed values in the long run, once the business personal property purchased before 2026 has been retired. But there could be loopholes. One attendee asked, what happens if, when a company purchases $2 million worth of equipment, it does so under a new entity? One of the goals of property tax policies is to create a neutral system that does not influence business decision-making, DeBoer replied to laughter, and I suspect they've created something that could. Obviously, the big ones aren't going to be able to divide themselves up into little $2 million segments, but a medium-sized business, one could manage it, he continued. Accountants and lawyers are going to earn their money. Business real property gets no new deductions. Taxes in SEA1 are shifting to big businesses with lots of personal property and to rural homeowners with very low-value homes, DeBoer said. It's an interesting policy mix. Library celebrates 110 years of service. Original building contained in addition by Lynn Thompson of KPC Media, Dateline Angola. The Carnegie Public Library of Steuben County has served the community for more than a century without any fuss or fanfare, and this week marks its 110th anniversary. The library opened its doors on November 27, 1915, and the original doors are still there, while more recent additions completely wrap around the original building and preserves its history. It was intended to have a program of dedication, but various delays arose owing to the installation of equipment, hence the plans for such a program were abandoned and the informal method chosen. The Steuben Republican reported on November 17, 1915. All the citizens of the town and township are urged to call on that day and inspect the new library and begin to use it. Ms. Rowan, an experienced librarian from the state librarian's office, has been assisting Mrs. Hector for several days in classifying and cataloging the books and arranging the system under which they will be adopted and every possible aid given to make the library useful and convenient to the people of Angola and Pleasant Township, according to the front page story. "Today, there is always something new," said Director Sonia Doris. "The Children's Department has expanded programming from preschool story time to juvenile fiction book clubs for teens," she said. "We still have book clubs for adults, the local history and genealogy center, and digital access for everyone, while our conference rooms host everything from skills coaches to business meetings and job interviews to depositions. The library's two large conference rooms were partitioned into seven smaller ones during the COVID-19 pandemic, but it's still a struggle to schedule all the meetings on our calendar," she said. Doris has been with the library since 1997, and watching repeat patrons grow up has always been the best part of the job. "Toddlers we saw then are bringing their own kids in now," she said. "The internet has changed how people use the library, but they still come around, usually twice a year, to renew their library cards and maintain access to the Libby cell phone app. Everybody loves Libby," she said. "Come see us anytime." Heffelfinger is named new Garrett Police Chief by Jeff Jones of KPC Media, Dateline Garrett. Mark Heffelfinger doesn't stay retired long. At the start of 2024, he retired for a second time after serving 4 years as Chief of Police for his hometown Butler Police Department. That's after he retired after serving 34 years with Indiana State Police. Now he's being called back to duty once again, this time for the city of Garrett. On Monday, November 10, Heffelfinger was appointed by Mayor Todd Fiant to lead the Garrett Police Department. Heffelfinger explained his job is to regain the public's trust in the police department. In October 2023, the DeKalb County Prosecuting Attorney's Office informed Garrett officials that it will no longer file any charges filed by Garrett Police. In a story that appeared in November 2023, Fiant said that the action had turned the department into nothing more than a security guard company. In a letter sent to city officials on October 13, 2023, the DeKalb County Prosecuting Attorney's Office announced it would not accept cases filed by the Garrett Police Department pending an ongoing investigation by the Indiana State Police. After a meeting with the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy and the Indiana Prosecuting Attorney's Council, I have decided that our office will not be filing any new criminal case that is investigated by any member of the Garrett Police Department, the letter signed by DeKalb County Prosecuting Attorney Neil Blythe said. Blythe asked Indiana State Police to investigate the Garrett Police Department following an incident that occurred in September 2023 that has been part of what he calls an ongoing culture problem at GPD. "I have been in communication with the Indiana State Police as their investigation continues," the letter from Blythe read. "I will determine the appropriate next steps at the conclusion of the Indiana State Police investigation into the conduct of several officers of the Garrett Police Department." In a November 2023 interview, Blythe said he could not comment on the specifics of the conduct mentioned in his letter, but said in some instances he is extremely concerned with the integrity and completeness of the evidence that is being presented to the prosecutor's office. Since that time, the Garrett Police Department has seen several officers come and go. In a phone interview, Heffelfinger said Garrett allows 14 officers, including the police chief. "As of Friday, the department is down 3 officers. My purpose is to reestablish some credibility within the department and where the department is respected by the public," Heffelfinger said. "They have a lot of good officers in Garrett, and given time, hopefully they can reestablish the public's trust. So far, I've been impressed by the officers I've met," Heffelfinger said. An Eastside High School graduate, Heffelfinger said at the time of his 2024 retirement While he didn't have any specific influences, he always knew he wanted to get involved in law enforcement. At age 21, he applied to the DeKalb County Sheriff's Department, originally working as a reserve, before becoming a deputy. After about 5 years, he transferred to the Butler Police Department while having applied to Indiana State Police. At that time, it was a numbers game, he said. We had 4,600 applicants applying for 60 positions. I came to Butler thinking, okay, I don't know if I'll make state police, so I'll come here. Lakeland High shows gains in freshman credit completion from staff report, Stateline LaGrange. Lakeland Junior Senior High School has made significant progress toward its goal of ensuring every freshman earns 10 high school credits by the end of their ninth grade year. This initiative, part of the school's broader effort to enhance academic readiness and foster long-term student success, has already yielded significant improvements. Over the past several years, Lakeland has strengthened instructional practices, expanded support systems, and closely monitored student progress. As a result, the percentage of freshmen who did not earn 10 credits by year's end has dropped significantly, from 19.6% with the class of 2025 to just 4.4% with the class of 2028. In fact, the class of 2028 exceeded expectations, earning an average of 14.92, with some students earning more than 20. This progress reflects the commitment of our teachers, counselors, administrators, and, most importantly, our students, said Principal Jason Schakow. Earning 10 credits during freshman year is a key indicator of high school success, and we are proud to see so many of our students meeting and exceeding that benchmark. Lakeland High continues to expand academic supports such as targeted interventions, individualized planning, progress monitoring, and increased communication with families, said a news release. The school is also working to build strong habits and a positive school culture that encourages students to take ownership of their learning. These results show that when we work together, we can remove barriers and open doors for our students, said Schakow. Our goal is to ensure every Laker enters sophomore year confident, prepared, and on track for graduation. Lakeland is committed to continuous improvement and will keep refining its strategies to support all students in reaching this critical milestone. Entries open for annual Kendallville Christmas Parade. From staff report, Stateline Kendallville. All Noble County organizations and groups are encouraged to enter the 57th annual Kendallville Christmas Parade, set for Saturday, December 6th at 1 p.m. The deadline to enter a float, vehicle, or walking unit is Monday, December 1st. To enter the parade, go to this link, kpcnews.com/Kendallville_Christmas_parade. Fill out the online form and submit it with the button at the bottom of the page. Entrants will receive an email confirmation or phone call for the entry. Call 347-0400, extension 3362 by Tuesday, December 2nd, if no confirmation is received. The parade theme is Parade of Trees. Units will line up at Northside Elementary School at noon. The parade route is west on Harding Street, then south on Main Street to end at the American Legion. These cash prizes will be awarded. Best overall unit, $100. Most unique, $100 for first place. $50 for second place. Best parade theme, $100 first place, $50 for second place. Parade rules are: no Santa costumes in parade. No tossing candy or other objects from floats or moving vehicles. All animals must be controlled by means of a harness, halter, or leash, and have a cleanup crew. In the event of inclement weather, the parade will be canceled and will not be rescheduled. Cancellations will be announced on WAWK Radio, kpcnews.com, and kendallvillechamber.com by 10 a.m. Breakfast with Santa tickets on sale now. Dateline Kendallville. Tickets are going quickly for reserved seating at Gaslight Playhouse's Breakfast with Santa on Saturday, December 13 at 10 a.m. at the Community Learning Center, 401 East Diamond Street. The event is a beloved holiday tradition. Guests will enjoy a pancake breakfast, meet Santa, experience a holiday stage show, and see a live nativity. All tickets are sold online at gaslightplayhouse.org in advance. Click on the box office tab, then on the Tickets Here button to make a purchase. No tickets will be sold at the door. Tickets are $15 per person for adults and $10 per person for children of any age. Everyone must have a ticket to attend the event. Inmates Return to Jail Following Fire by Jeff Jones of KPC Media, Dateline, Auburn. All inmates have been returned to the DeKalb County Jail after an electrical fire Wednesday morning forced the evacuation of the facility. A fire within an electrical panel at 11:33 a.m. Wednesday resulted in a significant power outage at the facility at 215 East 8th Street, Auburn. Although the facility is equipped with a backup generator, the fire occurred in the same panel that supplies power from the generator, rendering it inoperable. As a precaution, all inmates were safely relocated to surrounding county jails, DeKalb County Sheriff Brady Thomas said in a news release to The Star at 3 p.m. Friday. Thomas said repairs and cleanup were completed Thursday, earlier Friday, with the assistance of a school bus provided by the Garrett Kaiser Butler School District. Inmates were transported back to the jail after being temporarily housed at the LaGrange, Noble, and Steuben County jails. In addition to jail staff, the Auburn Police Department provided additional on-site security as inmates were escorted into the facility. Indiana State Police supported the DeKalb County Sheriff's Office by responding to calls in the county during the transportation detail. During Wednesday's fire, which was controlled in about 30 minutes, one inmate was treated and released to jail custody after complaining of chest pains. To transport the inmates to surrounding counties, the Garrett Kaiser Butler provided three buses and drivers, while a number of armed law enforcement officers rode the buses with the inmates. Multiple Indiana State Police vehicles provided an emergency escort to those jails. As of 3 p.m. today, Friday, all DeKalb County inmates have been safely returned to the DeKalb County Jail, Thomas said. I extend my sincere gratitude to all agencies that supported us throughout this incident, including the Auburn Police Department, Garrett Police Department, and the Indiana State Police. A special thanks goes to Noble County Sheriff Max Weber, LaGrange County Sheriff Tracy Harker, and Steuben County Sheriff Rodney Robinson for their unconditional support during this emergency. Caucus set for December 11th to fill Butler Council vacancy. From staff report, Dateline Butler. A Republican caucus will take place at 5 p.m. Thursday, December 11, to fill a vacancy on the Butler Common Council. The caucus will take place in the Butler City Council Chamber, 215 South Broadway. The vacancy was created with the resignation of at-large council member Bill White. To fill the position of a Republican elected official, potential candidates must be DeKalb County qualified Republican voters living within the city of Butler. Candidates must provide notice to DeKalb County Republican Chairman Richard Ring 72 hours by 5 p.m. December 8 prior to the caucus meeting time on Form C-EB-5. The form is available at the Indiana Secretary of State website, the DeKalb County Clerk's Office, or DeKalb County Republican Headquarters. Contact Ring by email at rick@dekalbcountygop.com, by phone at 925-0075, or by mail at P.O. Box 167, Auburn, Indiana, 46706. According to caucus procedures, only the Republican precinct committeemen are eligible to vote. The only person eligible to serve as a proxy for a precinct committeeman is a vice president committeeman for the same precinct. Women Who Care support Rocksteady Boxing Program, Dateline Auburn. DeKalb County's 100 Women Who Care held their quarterly meeting. At their final meeting of 2025, the group combined their collective giving power to support Rock Steady Boxing, a nonprofit that packs a powerful punch against Parkinson's disease. Located at the Judith A. Morrill Recreation Center, or JAM, in Garrett, Rock Steady Boxing offers classes Monday through Friday. The program helps those living with Parkinson's regain strength, balance, and confidence, both physically and emotionally. Beyond the gloves and the rope lies something even more powerful, community. Since 2018, Rock Steady Boxing has served more than 800 clients, providing not just movement-based therapy, but also connection, education, and hope. Their mission extends to supporting family members, empowering them to walk alongside their loved ones through the challenges of Parkinson's. During the meeting, Vicki Rodke, representing Rock Steady Boxing, shared heartfelt stories about the impact of the program. The funds from 100 Women Who Care will go toward continuing education and resources. As the group looks ahead to 2026, their commitment remains steady to continue lifting up local nonprofits and making meaningful change throughout DeKalb County. One meeting, one story, and one act of generosity at a time. The next 100 Women Who Care meeting will take place at 6 p.m. Tuesday, February 10 at the Community Foundation DeKalb County, 700 South Main Street, Auburn. If you're looking for a way to connect, give back, and be part of something bigger than yourself, consider joining this powerful circle of women. Bring a friend, share your heart, and see what happens when kindness multiplies. That's all the time we have for today. This has been Jennifer with Area News. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.